All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Like, I have a debt to pay to them guys. We're going to win the Stanley Cup for them.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the In the Dome podcast. Another guest today. You got this guy on. You're the analytic guy. For the first 10 minutes, you guys are just nerding it out with
much,
the analytic stuff.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It's a great conversation. And yeah, I mean, you've been following this guy for a while.
Yeah, he's just like, he has such awesome content, because I think a lot of the analytics guys get caught up in numbers, right? And not really portraying what the numbers mean. When you actually have a guy, because Jack used to work for the Marlies as an assistant coach, and then with the Leafs as an analyst. So he's a pro hockey guy, and he knows systems and tactics, and he like breaks it down in that respect. So rather than looking at, you know, say a percentile and be like, oh, Jonathan Huberdeau, his passing metrics are great. It's like, Jack has watched a ton of video. He knows like how to explain that in a way that's relatable to hockey when you're actually watching hockey. So that's why I think he's such an interesting guy, because it's not just numbers. It's actually like how the game is being played. So he's got a killer website. His ebooks are awesome. So he's just a cool guy.
So Jack Hahn is today's guest, and we go over some of the new Flames additions, Huberdeau, Uyghur, as well as a little bit on Kadri. Also touch on the Oilers debacle. How do we beat these lame idiots? And then Daryl Sutter systems and how that impacts the NHL and how it compares in the NHL, as well as his favorite Calgary Flame of all time. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Stick around after, because we'll do a little bit of some camp review so far, what we've seen in the first 2 weeks. Enjoy the show.
I think most people who listen to our show probably are familiar with your work, because we have Kent Wilson on all the time, and I know he and you kind of roll in the same circles. But if you don't know who Jack is, he is a hockey analyst and consultant. He focuses on tactics and player development. He's worked at the AHL and NHL level with the Toronto Marlies and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And pretty much my favorite resource for anything hockey related on his Substack or his hockey tactics books. They're awesome. So we're thrilled to have him jump on and talk some Flames with us. How's it going, Jack?
Excellent. Thank you for the intro. And really happy to know that people are getting value out of the things I'm putting out. Exactly what I had in mind when I started doing public work again after working in pro hockey for 3 years. So really, really great to be able to talk hockey with a variety of people again.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I guess we'll start with there's been no shortage of news in Calgary this summer, obviously. We thought we'd start with Jonathan Huberdeau, who is our new favorite player and person alive. Coming in off the heel, like, we were privileged to watch Johnny Gaudreau play for a lot of years in Calgary, and now we're like super privileged to watch maybe a similar type of player. But I think we'll kind of maybe start there with Huberdeau and take it as far as we can go. I think first off, maybe, because obviously the comparable is like, oh, he's just Gaudreau. He's an elite playmaker and they're kind of the same guy. He's just maybe a bit bigger. So maybe we can just kind of start with maybe a breakdown of what Huberdeau does in terms of his strengths, his weaknesses, what we can kind of expect from his game.
Okay. Well, I think it's pretty appropriate that you describe Huberdeau as like a slightly bigger Gaudreau. I actually think they're quite different players if you look at it in a more kind of a more nuanced or deeper in a deeper way. So here's one fun fact for you. So I just looked this up on Natural Stat Trick. If we go back to 2019 and we set a cutoff of, let's say, 60 minutes of 3-on-3 time, Jonathan Huberdeau is by far the best 3-on-3 player in the entire NHL. If you look at first of all, actual goals, but also expected goals when he's on the ice. And I think if you watch him play, like, you're going to see a guy with great wheels, great hands, a great sense for creating offense, and a guy who has a good shot and uses it once in a while. Right. And really promising stuff. Right. Like, but the thing that I find really interesting is, okay, so he's by far the best 3-on-3 player in the league. He's nowhere close to being the best 5-on-5 player in the league. And, you know, as someone who grew up in Quebec and as someone who grew up playing hockey in Quebec, I kind of have a bias against players like Huberdeau because I played with and against a lot of players like that who have great wheels, great hands, who can score. But as soon as the space disappears, the offense dries up too. Mm. Right. When Calgary first acquired Huberdeau and then signed into that big contract, not to say that he's going to underperform that contract or that he's not going to perform well. I just want to manage expectations because he's not the same kind of player as Gaudreau, because the thing that Gaudreau does that's really special for me is that he's one of the best at creating space. Whereas what Huberdeau does is he either exploits space by carrying the puck around you, or he just kind of forces pucks through you and he's able to make it work because he's got such great hands and he's such a good passer. Right. So for me, like, obviously, you know, whatever works in hockey, but I've always had a bias for players like Gaudreau who kind of moves you out of the way, as opposed to players like Huberdeau who, you know, have a lot of skill, but force plays through you. And, you know, if you look at both players, I know neither of them have been great playoff performers necessarily. Like if you just look at points per game, they're both down compared to the regular season. For Gaudreau, because he's small and he gets pushed around and, you know, in tight spaces, he can get out muscled. But for Huberdeau, it's because once he starts playing against good playoff teams, championship contenders, the space is just not available anymore. And you kind of saw that with Florida the past couple of years, like regular season juggernauts. And then in the postseason, all of a sudden they have trouble scoring. And Huberdeau is kind of, for me, the most obvious case study for that whole thing, because in the playoffs, the first two things to dry up are rush offense, because again, you're only playing against the top half of the league. And generally speaking, these teams are better organized and they got better defenders. And second is power play. And again, you're playing against the top half of the league in terms of probably PK and defending. And then once Huberto's offense dries up, you see that he doesn't really have a lot else to contribute. So it's not like a Matthew Tkachuk or an Andrew Mangiapane or even Nazem Kadri, who, you know, if they're getting shut down off the rush, they can retrieve you to death. They can maybe lay the body. They can pin you in your zone. They can make it difficult. And then, you know, Huberto doesn't really have that. So not to say that he's not going to be a great player for the Flames, but I just want to manage expectations for those who thinks that he's going to be all things to all people.
Right.
Well, that's a bummer, man.
Hey, we're expecting him to be our savior. No, it is true. Like, you know, if you look at some of his underlying metrics, you know, the way he creates offense strictly off the rush when compared to like Johnny Gaudreau, who's, you know, really good at creating end zone offense as well. So I think maybe the follow-up question is, because the Flames had a ton of success last year, really based off that top line being so unreal and so dominant. So how much of that kind of like eats into how much success they're going to have this year? Like, can they still kind of manage to be a top tier team in the Pacific? I think so.
Yeah. I actually, funny enough, I just recorded a podcast with like a LA Kings podcast. And, you know, we were talking about what their outlook is like, and they have a lot of kind of high upside pieces, whereas the Flames is kind of the opposite. I think you know what you're going to get from them. But then also some of those players, they may be starting to decline a little bit. And certainly I think the upside of this team is pretty capped. You know, I think last year they did really well with their style of play and how they maximize everybody. So this year, you know, if they have a repeat of what they had last year, which is a 0.677 point percentage, that for me would be extraordinary, right? Like, this is a team that I think is a pretty clear playoff team. But, you know, again, I manage the expectations. Like, don't be disappointed if there's a bit of a step back compared to last year.
Well, and I think maybe another question I had for you is, like, you know, I've heard Daryl Sutter talked about, I think this was one of the first thing he mentioned when he took over, was like, too many guys have relied off of rush offense over the past few years, and that dries up in the playoffs, right? Is there a way, what can Huberto do under Daryl Sutter? Like, how can Sutter kind of like maybe push him in a direction to, can he change his game? Is this something Daryl Sutter can work with him?
Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing whether he's going to play with Kadri or with Lindholm, because right. Lindholm actually, he does a lot of things that Barkov does in terms of being sound defensively, being even more like a third defenseman at times, staying high, being a shooter, kind of being in space. And he had a ton of success with Gaudreau, because Gaudreau would kind of, he would start with a puck. He would find a play, slip it to Lindholm in space. And then that's either a one-timer or a catch and shoot. And, you know, that's how Lindholm scores, because off the rush, Lindholm is not the fastest. So he's a bit like a better Toffoli at this point. Like, these are both two kind of in zone spot shooters off the cycle. Whereas Kadri is more either off the rush, or he'll kind of score off of these broken plays. Like, he's not as much of a, I would say, a thinker as a Lindholm or a Toffoli is. And then, you know, Mangiapane, I think he's going to be a really good top six player for them. Again, more of a retriever, more of kind of an instinct kind of player. So perhaps something like Huberto, Lindholm, Mangiapane could be effective, because then, you know, Huberto can play with the puck, but then he could have an option that's more of a shooter to Lindholm, or an option that's more of a puck retriever like Mangiapane, for instance. So perhaps that could work. You know, I don't know if it's going to be as effective. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be as effective as the Gaudreau, Tkachuk, and Lindholm line last year, but maybe there's a path for Calgary to have two pretty good top six lines. And if that's the case, then, you know, with Sutter's system that, you know, doesn't give you a whole lot off the rush going the other way, I think they'll be fine. And the other thing that I think is really interesting is, you know, one of the best ways to score that's not off the rush is off what I call re-entry. So what happens is you progress up ice, you set up in the O zone, you wear down the defenseman a little bit, the opposing defenders, you know, you maybe you create a couple of shot attempts. And then at some point, the other team, they get the puck back, but they're so tired and disorganized that they're just happy kind of punting the puck out of the zone. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to create a turnover inside the red line on those kind of plays, it's almost like getting a mini rush again. So in those situations, Huberto can be really good because you're basically creating kind of a small area, 3-on-2 or 2-on-2 against people who are tired. And then you got speed going back toward the net. Now, what that requires from him is, first of all, that he kind of follows the Calgary Flames way of playing, that he kind of sustains a bit of offense and that he has enough energy left over to get that last re-entry rush to end the shift and hopefully get something good out of that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. The Toffoli piece is interesting because he was a guy that we were kind of looking at hopefully getting for a number of seasons when he was moving around all over the place and we needed a guy just like him. He was great the first six games we had him last year, and then he kind of tapered off. I don't know if it was so much due to conditioning or what it was, but he hasn't really looked too strong so far in camp, and I don't know how much of that you can write off, but I'm not sure if he'll stick around on that top line.
So who was he playing most of last year and so far?
Well, he played with Yarncroc and Dubé in the playoffs.
Okay.
I think he had some time with Monahan before Monahan was shut down. So, I mean, not the greatest, but I think he was also playing with Mangiapane a little bit, Mangiapane and Backlund from time to time too. So kind of just all over the map. He never really had a solid set of line mates.
Yeah. So not a great situation for him. Like in his best years with Carter and what's the third one? Was it Ryan Spooner or I forget, but you know, it's tough for him because he doesn't have the speed to create a whole lot by himself.
Right,
but then he's such a smart player that, like, you know, playing him with Dubé and Yarncroc is not ideal because he's not going to get passes in those high danger areas, right? Like Dubé is very much kind of a down the wing, kind of tunnel vision kind of player. And then Yarncroc can do a little bit of everything, but he's not really the best guy at creating those passing lanes like, let's say, Gaudreau can. So, you know, maybe if you have the Kadri line, let's say Blake Coleman and Mangiapane taking on the matchup role, and then you can have a bit of a softer matchup for Lindholm, Huberto potentially, and Toffoli. Like maybe that could really work.
Another vote for Andrew Mangiapane on the top line. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, especially against opposing teams' top lines, because he can play whichever way, right? He can grind and he can play off the rush and he can make life difficult for you. He works really hard. You know, like a very easy comparable is Brendan Gallagher, and Gallagher's played against top lines since basically his second season in the league. Right?
Yeah, totally. I think the next follow-up question is, I think, in regards to Mackenzie Weegar, and I mean, you can keep going on Jonathan Huberto any way you want, but just want to touch on Weegar while we have you. Cause he's a guy, a lot of us, like even Huberto to an extent, right? Like everyone was stoked, but it's like, I've watched Jonathan, you know, Florida. I don't really watch the Florida Panthers play. So like, I don't have a huge beat on how the intricacies of Jonathan Huberto's game. So Mackenzie Weegar is a guy we've heard a lot about, a guy who, we've heard is very underrated and one of the most underrated guys in the league. I've watched him a handful of times. He seems like he's going to fit in real well, but what can you maybe tell us about Mackenzie Weegar and why he is so good?
So he's like Rasmus Anderson, except he makes more plays. That's how I would describe it. Like
perfect. The
only knock on him is that he's not the biggest and he's not extremely fast in a straight line, but everything else about him is top notch. Just a top-notch guy, like especially, you know, like I think Anderson's got a bit more reach. He maybe, you know, maybe defends a little bit better at this point, but having both of them in your top four on the right side, like that's super for me.
Yeah, I watched some of your, I watched one of your breakdowns, or it was an article I think you broke down. It was with regards to the Lightning, but it was just espousing all of Uyghur's, how great he played. And I've just been watching some of his game tape from last year. Man, he's just such a smart player in all three zones of the ice, even though he's not the fastest guy. One question that kind of comes up in Calgary with regards to the new additions, I think specifically with Uyghur and Kadri, is, are the Flames maybe better situated to meet the Oilers in a playoff matchup this season as opposed to last season? So maybe could you kind of talk about that? And then, not that you're going to be able to shut down McDavid, but tactically, what can the Flames kind of do to maybe adjust for playing a team like Edmonton or a high offense team? Because we've kind of seen the Flames in the past few playoff rounds get shell-shocked by the Avalanche in 2019, which put them on their heels and rolled them over. And kind of the same thing happened last year against the Oilers. So what can we do to beat the stupid Oilers?
How many games did the series go against the Oilers?
Five games.
The Flames won the first game
9-6.
9-6?
Yeah.
They blew 2 5-goal leads. I was there. It was insane.
It was crazy.
But yeah, the series wasn't even close after that.
So, I mean, from your point of view, like, what was the biggest problem? Was it just McDavid skating through people?
Well, it was probably a combination of goaltending and also Draisaitl on McDavid just being nuclear.
Yeah, our top line got demolished by them. And then we had some injuries in the back end. Tanev wasn't healthy. Zadorov wasn't healthy. Their defense had no – could not stop him. And Markstrom was terrible too. So
that sounds like a fun time.
It was great, yeah. It was really fun. It's been fun ever since, actually. Yeah, talking to Oilers fans all the time. It's great.
So I was in Toronto kind of toward the end of Kadri's tenure. And the thing that I think really, the single best thing that happened to him in his career was when he got promoted to like top line matchup role, because I think he really thrives when challenged, and he really thrives when he finds adversity. And I'm talking about Kadri.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hypothetically, if the Flames meet the Oilers again, then it's going to be, you know, can Kadri get under McDavid's skin? Obviously, McDavid is a better player, right? But can Kadri throw McDavid off his game and force him to defend and force him to take hits and force him to, I don't know, do things that are not McDavid things? And if he can do that, then at least the rest of the team has a fighting chance.
Well, please, Nazem, we'll pray to Nazem to be able to do this. We're stoked to have Kadri. I kind of forgot that you had been there at the kind of the end of Kadri. It feels like he's been gone from Toronto for like 20 years already, but it hasn't really been that long, actually. If you look at it, has it been? It's been like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's, you know, he's a skilled player, but he's more like almost like a Mangiapane, where like the skill takes a backseat to the effort and the engagement level. I don't know how well that's going to age. Maybe, I mean, probably we've already seen the best of Nazem Kadri, but you know, he's still a really good player, and maybe there's a way for, especially Sutter's system, because in his system, you get up ice and you stay up ice. So you don't necessarily scramble or skate around as much as you would in, you know, let's say in Edmonton system or even Winnipeg system. So it's very methodical, and maybe that's going to serve him well. It's a lot of kind of shooting and retrieving the offensive zone and small area quickness and beating people to puck battles. So I don't know, maybe that's going to help him age a little bit better.
That's a good segue to the next question. I mean, the Flames before last season missed the playoffs in the bubble in the All-Canadian division. It was a really rough time for Flames fans. We had Jeff Ward, and then Daryl Sutter came in too late to turn the season around. Nobody really knew what to expect. I don't think many people even picked the Flames to make the playoffs. And then sure enough, they win the division. Daryl Sutter wins the Coach of the Year. What do you see from a system philosophy standpoint? You just alluded to it a bit But what has Daryl Sutter done systematically to this team to make them so much more competitive, basically, you know, overnight?
So I heard a really good story from a former colleague of mine, Scott Pellerin, who was in player development for LA when Sutter first got hired over there. And the way that he told me was, you know, LA had a team that already had a lot of those pieces that were going to help them get the two cups. I think other than Jeff Carter, they had essentially the rest of the team already kind of set up, you know, with Doughty and Kopitar and Dustin Brown. And the coach before Sutter was Andy Murray, if memory serves. And Andy Murray was, you know, very technically qualified and competent coach, but he was very kind of X's and O's driven. And at some point, you know, they didn't have great results necessarily. You know, they were a playoff, I think out of the playoffs when he got fired. And when Daryl Sutter came in, he just said, look, let's simplify, let's play fast, let's play with effort, and let's just play simple, right? So he came into a situation where the players were already very good and the system was already pretty sound. And he just kind of simplified everybody's thought process, and they were able to play more free. And ultimately they went on that great run, right? And I think it was a very similar situation with Calgary when he came back here the second time, where, you know, I saw Gullitson and Jeff were trying to do some different things tactically. And then when Sutter came in, it was just, it looked like a slightly more modern version of the same system he ran in LA, which was very effective, right? Yeah. It was meat and potatoes. Don't force the play if it's not there. Let's arrive there with numbers. Let's out battle them to pucks. But we also value possession and up ice pressure. And, you know, basically, you know, even though Daryl Sutter is the opposite of someone that you would consider progressive, like the way that he plays, the way he wants his team to play, lends itself very well to showing up well analytically, because again, as I said, they get up ice and they stay up ice. Yeah. And that's what good hockey is, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, we heard a lot of that when Daryl Sutter was hired, just across the league, fans and whatnot, not even just Flames fans, a lot of, maybe it was Oilers fans speaking us that he's a dinosaur or he's old. But yeah, if you look at his, even in LA, his teams were always really good analytically. And I think probably for a lot of those, you know, points you mentioned, like if you're comparing Daryl to the rest of the league, because you always get this saying, right? Oh, the game's passed him by. I mean, he proved last season that it hasn't. But if you're comparing his style of coaching across the league to other good teams, why is his coaching effective and some other coaching tactics just don't seem to fit across the league? Like, how does he match up?
Okay. So, and I've described it kind of an illustrated form in one of my eBooks, the most recent one, which is called Hockey Tactics 2022. But basically, a Sutter team is a dump and chase team. They're not doing anything crazy off the rush. And that's why, like, they're usually good at controlling play, but not so good at scoring, is because most goals in hockey come off the rush. But the way that they get up ice is they get up the strong side. So they cut the ice in half. They try to outman you with all five players in this kind of relatively narrow corridor. It's almost like a rugby play where they just push the puck into the offensive zone and then they shoot and retrieve until either you get the puck and clear it out or they score or your goalie freezes it. It's basically like, I would call it almost like a dump truck style of offense. Like, they don't care how they get there as long as they get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the thing that really surprised me last year, and which was directly responsible for, you know, the Flames having such a great season, is basically three lines out of four had to play the Sutter way, but then the top line could do kind of whatever they wanted. So what would happen is, up and down the lineup, lines 2, 3, and 4, they would play, I don't know, they would play for 0-0 or 1-1. And then the top line, they win the game 2-0 or 2-1.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So the question is, can the Flames find either one super line or two, you know, good lines and then have the bottom six just make sure nothing good or bad happens either way, and then win the game with their top six. That's what it comes down to for me.
Yeah, if you're looking at, I mean, it's funny how you say that. Like, I don't know how much you remember from 04. It's all very vivid. Very vivid for Flames fans. We'll never forget it. But what happened is this team just started to blossom into, like you were just saying, I the way I describe it is this relentless forechecking, where you just knew you were going to get the puck back as soon as you get into the offensive zone. It didn't matter who had it going in. You just knew the Flames were going to retrieve it. And over a 7-game series, it was just delicious to watch, because over time you're like, oh my God, like, we are literally taking control over this game, over this series, just in the offensive zone, the forecheck. So, I mean, we saw the extreme of that in 04, which led to some great success. It was in, so, you know, but
we won the Stanley Cup.
So we won the Stanley Cup, you know, but yeah, it's funny that, you know, that you mentioned that, and that's something we've seen in the past as well.
Yeah. And I think the only new piece that I really foresee, which we started seeing last year also with Oliver Shillington, is having the D's a little bit more involved off the rush offensively. And this is one area that I think Sutter is actually, you know, he's actually been a lot more open-minded than in years past with LA, especially. So now we have, you know, Shillington joining the rush, or Rasmus Anderson joining the rush, or Hanifin or Uyghur now. So on those sort of rush plays, or on those re-entry plays, having it's a little bit more active is certainly going to help things too. So, I mean, defensively, I think they're really well positioned to play the kind of game that they want to play now with Uyghur. And then now Tanev is going to be able to play maybe more on the third pair, and you can manage his minutes a little bit better. And I think the main challenge is getting Huberto to buy in and to be comfortable, and then leveraging his kind of unique assets off the rush and at 3-on-3, because remember, he's the best 3-on-3 player in the league.
Yeah.
And in the regular season, it matters quite a bit. In the playoffs, not at all, but at least if you want to go back and try to approach that, you know, 0.67 point percentage from last year, then, you know, being good at 3-on-3 is going to help a lot.
What are some, like, you mentioned that, right? Like, trying to get Huberto to buy in, because that's something we heard about Gaudreau when Sutter was first hired. It's like, oh, he's not a Sutter guy. It'll be a disaster, blah, blah, blah. Like, from your perspective, like, maybe from, like, a player development type thing, like, how do you work with a guy just, like, say, buy into this, we'll have so much more team success. Is there any, like, broad stroke points on that you can, like, give us a bit of insight into?
So I feel like, all things considered, it's not a bad scenario for Huberto, because first of all, last year, I think that Gaudreau-Sutter relationship ended up working out really well. Mm-hmm. So there's that precedent. And I think if we're just talking about one player that plays a very different style than everybody else in the top six, as a coach, I think you can give that player some leash, because you know that if Huberto turns it over, whether it's Kadri or Lindholm or Blake Coleman or Mangiapane or Toffoli, like they're going to be there defensively, right? So Huberto can play a little bit more free, and then he can do things that all the other guys can't do. So we're just going to take advantage of that, right? So again, whether it's Calgary last year or Dallas last year or Boston every year, it's the top line guys get special permissions, but they produce and they still try to do the best that they can to fit into the team system.
You mentioned something interesting there, throwing Tanev on the third pairing. This guy, I mean, when we first acquired him, from an analytic perspective, we're kind of like, geez, don't know how this is going to go. But he was phenomenal last season, even good in the playoffs, playing with like one arm, essentially. You kind of think, you know, just looking on paper, that you slot him in on the top pairing, but it's an interesting concept of sheltering his minutes a bit more. That was his first full season I think he's ever played, and the guy plays very tough minutes. He doesn't take a shift off, kind of like Giordano. But how do you think you would roll out the pairings to start the season, or even what would be your season strategy?
I mean, if everybody's healthy, you can almost roll lines, like at least roll the pairs on the right side. Like, I don't see any reason why you would have to shelter any one of those players in particular. They're all good two-way defensemen. I guess it depends who's on the left side, because I'm a little bit less familiar. For Tanev, it's just, if he's healthy and if he's feeling good, he's still a good player, right? Like, you know, analytically, of course, the last bit in Vancouver was kind of rough, but then you also see that now that he's gone, Quinn Hughes is not as good as he, good as he used to be, right?
Yeah.
So there's something there, but you know, for players at that age, it's like, as a human being, like if you're not healthy, if you don't feel good, then of course you're not going to be at your best. Mm-hmm. And I know that you guys want to talk about Yusuf Välimäki. Like, I haven't really looked into his case recently, but he's had a ton of injuries, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, how can you get in the gym or get on the ice or get better or add things to your game if you can't even do anything? Like, it's tough.
Right? Yeah. Well, you can't. You're not in the game simulation. That's where you, where you really advance your game. So, would you start the season, Tanev, with Uyghur? 1-2 top pairing.
Well, see, now you got two righties together. So Uyghur can play the left. So that could be a top pair. That could work because when Uyghur played with Ekblad, he played the left side and he was excellent. So you know, if you want to have. So then Shillington was with Tanev last
year. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right. And then
you had Zadorov and Hannafin Anderson, Zadorov, Gabranson. So Gabranson's gone, but you have Uyghur now. So I think most people have it mapped out right now. Uyghur, Tanev, Hannafin Anderson. Shillington's out for a bit when he get back like Shillington, Zadorov type thing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how people have it mapped out. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I mean, like last year, Calgary went top four and then the third pair didn't play out that much. So, you know, it's going to be nothing new to them. And that's going to be fine, especially in the regular season where you don't have to worry about the other team catching on as much. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Just like a quick follow-up, not even specifically about Välimäki, but like, again, from like a player development perspective, like what do you do with like a young guy who's had so much promise, like back when Välimäki was drafted in like, you know, first year pro, like he looked like a stud guy, looked great. He had a huge injury, rehabbed, came back the next year. He was playing overseas, looked great, came back, got hurt again, had trouble. Like with a guy who's young like that, who had so much raw talent, like what can you do? Like, how long do you work with a guy like that? Like, is there any, what can you do for a guy who had so much raw talent, showed so many signs of being such a great player, and then just got like either bombarded by injury and just all kinds of developmental delays. Like, how do you work with that?
It's tough for me to say, you know, without knowing the specifics, but first of all, you got to make sure that he stays healthy. Like that's like, if you don't have health, you don't have anything that you can build on. I remember when I was with the Leafs, I did a study on all of Calgary's defensemen at the time. So it was like Hamilton, Giordano, TJ Brody, Välimäki, Anderson, Shillington. And out of that bunch, like Välimäki was the best at retrieving pucks. And he was so patient on retrievals, like shaking and baking guys, like looking them off. I remember talking with some of my colleagues who weren't a huge fan of his pace or his ability to kind of play up ice very fast, like let's say Shillington can, right? But he's definitely got something that's elite in terms of his ability to retrieve the puck and to beat that first forechecker. And again, like he missed a whole year with a knee injury, so maybe some of that quickness he'll never get back. But you know, at 23, potentially he's got another 10 years of NHL usefulness if they do this right. So it's about being patient and just, again, he's got to be healthy. And then once you have that, then you gradually add things to his game, because if let's say he's in a position to make the NHL team with, you know, with Shillington out, and you get him 10 games with Mackenzie Uyghur, maybe some of that puck poise and that timing comes back. Because either he's going to play with Uyghur or with Tanev or with Anderson. And any of those three will be an excellent partner for him, because they can both do a bit of everything and then they can really read off each other. So So just finding a way to get him up to speed and back into NHL minutes, I think it's going to be the best thing
for him. Yeah, patience is a virtue. It's funny, right? Like the guy's like 23, and I mean, even we're guilty of it. We're like, oh, he's done. You write him off. Can we trade it? Like he's going to be out of here. I mean, maybe in a few years he'll end up on the Leafs like every other Flames defenseman. Yeah, true, so yeah. You guys collect all of our favorite defensemen. So, all right, cool, man. I think that was great. I'm good. You good, Jordan?
Yeah, Jack. Who's your favorite Calgary Flame?
All time or just both. Right now?
Yeah, you have both.
All time is Al MacInnis.
Ooh, excellent choice.
All time. Yeah.
The worst thing about Al, just a quick anecdote, is that they didn't retire his number, but it's like in the rafters as like an honored number. It's terrible. Yeah. So bad.
I got to go with Gary Roberts. So it covers both spectrums here, Flames and Leafs.
Okay.
All time. But
do you have a current favorite Flame?
I really like Toffoli's game because that's kind of how I used to play when I played in high school. Like just absolutely nothing off the rush, but I would find these soft spots and score. So nice. I appreciate a guy who has bad boots, but he's really smart and he's definitely that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hey, cool, man. So people can find you on Twitter. Must follow on Twitter. You have a new ebook out. It's Analytics for Coaches. Is that correct? It's awesome.
Yeah. So it's priced higher than my ebooks. It's $75 US, but essentially it's addressed to coaches who are serious about implementing analytics, who don't know where to start. I make it really easy for you. It's 2 hours of video instruction with some concrete steps that you can use to start calculating your team's Corsi and zone exits, zone entries, all the other good stuff. I've had U10 coaches buy it and tell me that they're doing great. I've also had pro and major junior coaches who bought it, who are making use of it. So maybe check that out. If you don't work in hockey full-time, then just follow me on Twitter at JHANHKY. And then I think you'll learn plenty.
Your blog is awesome too. And I mean, the hockey tactics playbook is a must buy every year for like everyone. I always buy it and tell everyone to buy it. So, you're working for a hockey team too now, are you? Is that right?
So, I'm mostly working from home. This year I'm working with the Connecticut Whale of the PHF. So that's women's professional hockey. It's my second season with them. Last year we had a really great year. We went from last in the league in the pre-COVID season to first in the league in the regular season.
Wow, and nice.
We ended up losing in the final to Boston, but really great year. And I love working women's hockey. It's such a great venue to, you know, progress and to try new things. And also I'm working with a professional men's team in the Swiss National League. So we're working with some really high-end players. We've had a pretty good start to the season, and you know, I'm not going to share the name, but really optimistic and really enjoying working with them. So
nice. Cool.
maybe back to the NHL in the future, but right now I'm really happy just being in the public sphere and doing all the fun things I'm doing now.
Come work for the Flames someday. We need a guy like you.
Maybe if you have me on again, I can tell you my Calgary Flame story where I got to meet Chris Snow and Brian Burke. So
what? Hey, no way.
Maybe next time.
Okay.
That's bonus material.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet, man. All right. Well, we appreciate your time. It's been a blast. You have great insights. So thanks, buddy. That's sweet.
Take care and have a good season.
Yeah, you too, man.
Thanks, Jack. See ya.
Thanks.
Yeah.
NFL action is in full swing over DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code THPN to get $200 in free bets if your team wins when you place a $5 bet on any football game. That code is THPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See the show notes for details. Support for the Hockey Podcast Network comes from Raycon. Raycon wireless earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. They have gel tips. They won't fall out of your ears. They fit in perfectly. They give you 8 hours of playtime, have a 32-hour battery life, and they're not $10 million either. So you get quality audio at half the price of other premium wireless earbuds. They have over 50,000 five-star reviews, So go to buyraycon.com today and use code THPN15 to get 15% off your Raycon order. That code is THPN15 at buyraycon.com to score 15% off. Buyraycon.com, code THPN15.
Okay, folks, there you have it. Jack Hahn, that was great.
Yeah, awesome, dude.
It'd be cool. You mentioned come to Calgary. It'd be cool if him and Kent Wilson teamed up and...
Frick yeah, ran this thing.
Ran this thing, eh? Just told good old Brad.
Told Brad what to do.
Yeah. Although I don't know if Brad needs to.
I don't even need any telling anymore. Yeah. Well, we'll see, but he's...
We'll see. It was a bit sobering, though, listening to
his thoughts. Well, I think he makes a good point, right? Because, like... we are kind of all even in the context of Gaudreau having such an insane season last year, like Huberto had a similar season. It's like a lot of that's not going to be repeatable. I think he is still a really good player and a star in this league, but like, are you expecting him to put up the most, he put up the most amount of assists by a left winger in league history last season. So I don't know if we're expecting that again. So
depends how many 3-on-3 overtime games we see.
We'll see. Guy's good at 3-on-3. And yeah, boy, did he look good last night against the Oilers. And I know it was their freaking AHL squad, but he looked pretty good.
Well, isn't the Oilers team in the AHL squad usually
minus two players? The freaking Edmonton Sun had a big article about how the Flames can only beat the Oilers when it doesn't matter today. It's like, oh my Lord. Yeah.
It's so funny. A preseason Oilers fans are so fucking butthurt that we kicked their ass 4-0.
Dude.
Hey? Literally, the Oilers are the only team in the league where if you lose to them, then you're a loser. And if you beat them somehow, you're still a fucking loser, even when you beat them.
See,
it's the most miraculous thing, really, if you think about it from a fan base perspective. It's like, how do they somehow they just turn it so no matter what, you're the loser?
Delusional. And even if we had beat them in that second round, like, you know, nothing would change in terms of it'd be the exact same shit.
Yeah,
it's just brutal. Maybe Nas can freaking I think Nas will be able to take us to a level against the Oilers that maybe we haven't been able to get to.
Well, even there's just the center depth you have back as your third C. What if the third C is a shutdown line and you're just matching up Nas and Backlund against McDavid for the whole series? They take turns and you basically lean on Nas and his line to score some goals against McDavid, and then Backlund's strictly shut down. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. The top six matches up against them better, but stupid Oilers.
So, okay, preseason. The camp so far, what we've seen, they've played, two inter-squad games or one inter-squad game. They've played two preseason games against the Canucks, home and away. I was in Vancouver for the weekend, and I was like, fuck. It was a good game.
Dustin Wolf was great.
Dustin Wolf was fantastic. Mike Stone, game winner. It was funny because there's a lot of penalties called in that game in Vancouver. And I think, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think the Canucks had like 8 power plays. And the Flames had 6, and then we got one in overtime. Mm-hmm. But Michael Stone was the trigger man. We saw it last night in last night's game, too. He's the trigger man on the power play.
And well, anyways, I started blasting that Stone, just blasting from everywhere.
Yeah, he didn't have, I don't think, one effective shot in the game in Vancouver until overtime. So it was nice, and that was a fucking nice goal, man. That felt good.
That was sweet. Nice little feed from Matt Phillips.
Yeah, that was freaking awesome. And then Stone looked good last night against the Oilers once again. How is this guy not going to make the team, or at least he's getting a contract?
Yeah, like you'd feel pretty bad not giving him a contract at this point.
How about that Seattle game?
That was a snooze. That was a snooze fest.
That was bad.
That was really bad. Daryl was not impressed. Nobody was particularly impressed. And you know what? It was an annoying game because that's a game where some of the guys in the bubble, you want to see a lot from guys like Sonny Milano or Adam Rzeczka or Yusuf Alamaki or anybody. And the only guy who seemed to be interested in playing the game was Dan Vladar. So
Fuck, Uso looked brutal.
He's been, Vladar's been good though, but yeah, Uso did not. That was a bad look in that Seattle game.
Uso looked bad in Vancouver too.
Yeah, it's been rough, man.
What have you seen from Milano so far?
I don't know. Probably not as much as I'd want.
No, you're leaves you wanting more. Wanting. Darryl even said, to start camp, they asked him what he needed to see from Milano a lot fast.
Yeah.
And half his opportunity to impress the coach is gone. He's already played two games. What, has he got two left?
So what, do they play the Oilers on Saturday or Friday? They play the Oilers tomorrow.
I think Egan's looked better, hasn't he?
It's hard to tell because Milano played in that game with a pretty much skeleton crew where Egan played with the other game against, like, you know, with some real guys. So it's hard to parse that out. I don't know. I would still risk signing Milano, right? Like, I think there's still enough skill, raw skill and speed and talent there that it's like there's literally no risk. But I don't know. He had, like, none of the guys on the bubble have really stood out, like, have made a huge case. I think other than Matthew Phillips in that one game, he wasn't great against Seattle, but I thought he was really good against Vancouver.
Well, who's that one guy who scored the first goal in Vancouver? He almost scored again against the Oilers last night.
Well, there's been a few guys who are just kind of like randoms who have stood out. Like Brett Sutter has two goals.
Brett Sutter's looked good.
Darryl doesn't give a shit, though.
No. Hey, coach, is it special to see, you know, is that Brett? Is that Darryl's son?
Yeah.
Yeah, is it special? No. Is it special? No. We've been doing it for 30 years. Fucking preseason.
Okay, the best, like, Darryl's in mid-season form is the media, dude. Mid-season. Guy absolutely roasts Matthew Tkachuk.
Absolute roasting. This could be roasting of the season already. We're a week into fucking camp. And he's got fucking roasted the season.
And then, like,
if you haven't heard it, because maybe
Let's put it in.
As far as their skill sets, any comparisons between Tkachuk and Toffoli?
One guy's won Stanley Cups. Been a big part of long playoff runs.
Holy fuck, eh? Roast. How do you like getting roasted, Matthew Tkachuk? You know he's probably heard that by now.
Oh, 100%.
Probably fucking Ryan Leslie probably sent it to him, eh? Our boy.
Totally. DM'd it right to him. It's funny because, like, people are kind of like, oh, I can't believe Darryl would do that. It's like, if Tkachuk was on the team, he would do that. Like, this is the guy who, after, what was it, game four in the playoffs when Gaudreau missed that, like, wide-open net against Dallas, is like, rather have a guy who scores big goals than a guy who scores regular season goals.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because didn't that come up with the interview with Leslie? That part of the whole, you know, Darryl's thing was during the season and everybody was hitting their individual achievements, the 100 points, the 40 goals, and Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau one night after the other. And that's when he said that. Right? No, I'd rather have a guy that scored a fucking big goal. Just give me one big goal in the playoffs, which Johnny Gaudreau did. So did Matthew Tkachuk in game seven against the Stars. Yeah. So they did. But how about two then? How about fucking against the Oilers?
How about a long Stanley Cup run?
Yes.
Anyways.
One's won Stanley Cups. That's the difference. And had been a part of long runs.
Anyways, again, preseason, it's hard to, you know, parse out much from preseason. But again, like, you look at a guy, if you want to make the team, like, look at what Shillington did last year. It was like, in this, at about this time last year, it was like apparent that Oliver Shillington was killing it. And he was like, this guy's going to make the team because he's been so good in two or three games. Like, he's been so head and shoulders better than everybody. And we haven't really seen that from anyone who has a shot of making this team yet. I don't think. Like, again, Pelche has been good in spurts. Phillips has been good in spurts.
You know who we have? Michael Stone.
Yeah, Stone.
So don't. But be seriously, surprised.
Some of the more low key guys, like Ben Jones, I thought had a really good game the other night, like against the Kraken. Even I thought he was one of the better guys. And it's like, who is Ben Jones? I don't know, but he looked pretty good.
Yes,
Brett Sutter had a couple good games.
And there's, what is the other guy's name? He scored the first goal again in Vancouver.
Was it Clark Bishop?
I don't think it's Bishop. I'm not even looking at this guy's name. Never heard of this guy.
Yeah, I think it was.
But I think he scored again. He almost scored again last night. He was close.
Yeah, so it's some of those guys that have really, and again, they're not going to make the team. So it's just kind of like, man, if you wanted to make a case to put your stamp on making a team, and even Rzeka and Daryl kind of ripped into him, he ripped into him after the Seattle game, said he wasn't efficient at all. Yeah, like you haven't made a huge impact on the team where it's like, hey, we're going to sign Cody Eakin because you haven't shown much, right? So we'll go with the guy who's a veteran.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's hard, right? It's hard to get to make an impact, but like I said, you got to do it like Shillington did last year. It's like make it impossible for them to not have a roster spot for you.
Yeah, you're right. We just haven't really, except for Michael Stone. Michael Stone is making a serious case, right? Like, hey, if Shillington is injured for a little while,
yeah,
how does this guy not crack the open roster?
It's just hard to like see them not signing him. I don't know if he'll be on the opening roster because
I think
they'd probably prefer Milosh, who I don't know, like, is he like, if I watched a game, any of the games that I've watched, I watched the Seattle game and I watched the Vancouver away game. And the game last night, like I couldn't tell you where Nick Milosh is, but I kind of feel like it's his spot to lose. It's between him and Valimaki, and then Stone's making his case. So,
what have your thoughts been on the lines and the pairings that you've seen so far in camp?
They're
really taking a good look at Toffoli up there on the top line.
Yep, and I don't know. Like they looked pretty good last night. They had a bit going last night, and I mean, like Daryl said, it's going to take them freaking forever to get some chemistry going.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I thought Huberto was buzzing last night. He sent a few passes to Toffoli that like maybe he hasn't been ready for, you know, playing with a new guy and playing with a guy who can get you the puck in a really elite way. It's like, oh shit, I didn't think that was coming to me.
So. Yeah, there was one sick pass you saw in the highlights where he just fucking basically threaded it through the smallest little tiny gap right onto Toffoli's stick. No finish though on that one, but
so I don't know. I don't know. I want Manji to get some games in. That's what just kind of what I'm looking forward to. Freaking Kadri was, I go, it was against the AHL Oilers, but Kadri looked fucking awesome last night.
Dude, like I said, their team is, I guess they got some new additions since.
They are an AHL team. It was funny. Backlund played on the wing last night with Kadri and Coleman just because they had a bunch of guys playing, but somebody reminded me of, okay, I remember the awful Michael Backlund on the wing line from Jeff Ward. But somebody's like, hey, remember when he put Johnny Gaudreau on the third line with Derek Ryan and Milan Lucic? Do you remember that
one? God, dude. Is that when the only solution was to bench fucking Monahan and Gaudreau?
I think so. Holy shit, dude. I think that was like, it was Lindholm, Dubé, and Kachuk were the top line, and then it was like Monahan, Mangiapane, and who knows else, who else, and then freaking he had Gaudreau with Lucci. Oh god,
what a fucking disaster, dude.
So I don't know. I in terms of guys who are gonna make the team, I don't know. I hope Matthew Phillips plays a couple really good games because he's one of my favorites, but I don't know. It doesn't look like anyone's really staking a claim to a role that would not be one of the guys like Milano or Eakin. So
yeah, well, there's good news is there's still quite a bit of camp left, so if you're one of these players and you haven't done that yet, you still have a bit of time to fucking get your ass in gear. But yeah, like you said, no one's really standing out much at this point.
Sam Vladar has been great. That's kind of like the only guy who, other than the top guys, who has been like, wow, he's been really good
already on the team.
Yeah.
Well, anything else from camp? I mean, not a lot to watch. I watched a bit of the Oilers game last night. I watched the first period of Seattle, and that was fucking terrible.
Okay, the one thing it was good, though, the Seattle game, the only reason I kept watching it is because there was no commentary. Oh, was that a treat?
You like that, eh?
It's like,
during preseason, when I don't know who any of the players are, it's kind of nice having the commentary. But
oh, I love no commentary. I'd pay so much money.
I was going to say, you know who else actually has looked good? Dustin Wolf.
Oh, yeah, he's been
great. But we know he's not on the team, but dude.
He's proving.
The future looks bright with Dustin Wolf, man.
He's proving why.
He was that game in Vancouver that I watched. I would say he was the best player.
Fucking awesome. He was so good. Outstanding. The only other piece of news is kind of like the Mackenzie Weegar thing. The pending contract, the ticket to the bank.
The ticket to the bank, Pat Steinberg.
it seems to be that we're all kind of wringing our hands because Elliot Friedman's reporting that Uyghur will not or does not want to negotiate during the season. So if this doesn't get done before the season starts, it won't get done until the off season. And we've seen that before. We've seen this song before. So
sure have.
I don't know. It feels like, given the fact everybody's so open about it, it feels like it's going to get done. People are sick. It's just kind of like, you know, it's like, I will never believe any reporting on a done deal ever again in my entire life since I was fucking burned by Craig Conroy and look like an absolute moron for like being so certain Johnny Gaudreau is going to re-sign. So I can't, until it's pen to paper, you can't take anything to the bank. So I don't know. Do you think it gets done? I don't know. It feels like it will, but who knows? Time's running out here.
Well, you still have.
I guess you still got like 2 weeks.
Well, you don't have that much time. When's the first opening day?
I think opening day is the 13th.
I thought it was the 9th. You better double check that.
I'm going to double check. I think it's the
13th. Double check it. Double check it.
The Flames season opens on the 13th.
Oh, yeah. You got 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's loads of time.
That's loads of time. Just get it. The snow's coming, Brad.
Uyghur's having a good camp.
Boy, did he look good last night.
Zadorov absolutely plastered fucking... Who was that last night?
Dude, even without Shillington, our D looks so good.
Yeah. The D looks fucking great. Yeah. Tanev hasn't played, though, has he?
No, he hasn't played yet.
Without Tanev and Shillington, yeah. They look great.
So they look really good. Except for, did you see Rass's nice whiffs on the power play against, I think it was the first game.
No, didn't see that one.
Rass was in full mid-season. Oh, you were in Vancouver. That's right.
I was watching live.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is actually, it was a good venue. It was a good outing, good atmosphere in there. Lots of Flames fans. Saw lots of Flames fans walking around. So that was good. Jerseys and all, you know. Yeah. So what's next for camp? We got the Oilers on Friday in Edmonton.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
That'll be fun. They're going to seek revenge and fucking.
Yeah.
Watch, we'll beat them. Yeah.
If we beat them, they'll still be like,
oh, yeah, this is why you're still a loser and we're better. Even though you beat us twice, you're actually the losers. You didn't actually beat us twice. We let you beat us or this happened or the whatever. You're the loser, not us, loser.
That's right. One guy who did look really good was Ilya Solovyev last night. He's not going to make the team, but he was freaking great, I thought, on D. So I don't know. I'm just kind of still watching some of these guys who are on the bubble, like Rozichka. I really hope Matt Phillips makes a push, and I don't know. You probably have to see a bit more out of Sonny Milano, but I don't know.
Yeah, even you. So same thing. Well, yeah. lots of camp left. We'll definitely have another podcast soon once we see a little bit more and see some cuts happening. And
yeah, I think there'll be cuts. There'll probably be cuts after tomorrow's game, I think.
Hopefully there's some storylines here. Maybe we'll beat the Oilers with the A squad or the B squad. Eh?
At this point, Daryl's press conferences, I mean, at any point this season, they're still the most entertaining part of the whole thing.
Yeah. Cushion is a pillow with feathers.
Cushion is a pillow with feathers. Right?
Liability in the playoffs, you can kiss my ass.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.